Sorry, I've got a real knot in my tail today, he said, turning those blue eyes up on me again. I felt frustration retract its claws from my stomach. And I know you can take care of yourself, but it still drives me crazy to think about it. I guess I'm being a hypocrite, considering how close I came to hitting you this morning.
He'd spent the whole day hauling junk around, trying to put it into some kind of order, and that was after having his brother read him the riot act. Of course he was entitled to be short with me. I sat down on the edge of the bed.
You didn't hurt me.
Hey, I mean it. Not even close. I wouldn't have jumped in if I didn't know I could block you. I picked up his hand, folding his thumb toward his palm and the other four fingers over it.
Plus, you had your fist like this, and that's a good way to break your thumb.
I pressed my lips to his knuckles to show I was just teasing. Finally, I was rewarded with a smile. His soft cotton shirt had ridden up his back slightly, exposing a sliver of skin. I wanted to touch it, so I did. I dragged his shirt up that much farther as I worked my fingers up and down his back in soft strokes.
Feels nice,
he whispered.
Will you stay? I don't want to see anyone but you for a while.
He moved back toward the wall, a silent invitation to slide into the small bunk beside him. It felt so good and easy now. I knew exactly how we fit together, as if we'd been cut from the same pattern.
You okay?
I asked, fingers worrying the front of his shirt. Liam wrapped an arm around my waist, drawing me closer. Everything that came out of the laundry practically reeked of detergent and bleach, including the shirt he wore. But underneath it all was this scent that was all warm skin and evergreens and mint toothpaste. And that was Liam. The scent had a drugging effect on my system. I took in one steadying breath after another.
Just dog tired, darling.
The silence that followed was the first true spell of calm I'd experienced in months. It was the dim, shadowed light, the steady rise and fall of his chest against my cheek, his warmth pressed against mine. All of these things conspired against me. One moment I was awake, Liam's fingers carefully stroking the loose hair back out of my face. The next, I was slipping into a slow, sweet doze. The soft kiss was the only thing to bring me out of it.
Dinner time,
he said, his own voice sounding rough from sleep.
They just shouted down the hall.
And yet, neither of us moved.
What did you do today?
He asked after a while.
I didn't even ask.
Are you sure you want to know?
He leaned back at that, the focus in his eyes sharpening. I got us into Clancy's private collection of files. Besides a list of the different tribes and their last known locations, it basically was a digital scrapbook of nightmares.
How did you get access?
Now it was my turn to fix him with a look. The usual way? I watched his reaction carefully, already feeling the words settle between us, add to that space. They were an unwelcome reminder. This is what I do. This is who I am. He took it in stride.
Was there anything about the cure on there?
A bit about the testing they did at Thurmond to find the cause, but it turns out that they're going to close Thurmond down at the end of March.
Aw, damn,
he said.
I'm sorry.
Cole still wants to plan a hit.
Well, I guess 2 months is better than 2 weeks,
he said.
We'll figure it out. But can I ask you something? And can I get an honest answer out of you?
I bristled a bit at that.
This quartermaster thing you suggested, me being in charge of supplies, is it a consolation prize?
What do you mean?
Is this a way to keep me here? Keep me behind, I mean. When things get rolling with the camps, am I going to be left waiting here hoping everybody comes back in one piece?
You mean exactly what we're all going to be doing while you're out looking for supplies? I said. No. And for what it's worth, Cole was only panicking because you didn't tell him where you were going. It was the same for me. You were just gone. I know you can fight if you have to, but I don't know that he does.
He has no idea what I've been through, what I've had to do. He acts like I don't even know how to use a gun.
His hands bunched up the back of my shirt.
I do, though. Harry taught me before I left home. I just don't want to shoot one unless I have to.
That's the way it should be, I told him. Sometimes I can't believe that this is happening to us, and I wonder when it became so natural to pick up a gun and act like it's nothing. I have to teach the other kids how to shoot, and I have no idea how I'm going to do it. I don't know how to show them how absurd and terrible it is that they even have to learn.
Maybe it doesn't have to be that way, he said quietly. Maybe we don't have to actually show up with guns blazing.
I'm not sure I could have been more surprised if he'd suggested we should just go straight to the top and assassinate Gray. I'd based my camp liberation plan on the one he and the others had come up with at East River, and both involved considerable use of force. No, it has to be a real fight, I said. They have to take us seriously. The thing is, what I can't get over is how the kids will take it. What'll happen if they find themselves in the position to kill and pull the trigger? We can train them to study their nerves, and we can give them targets to practice with, but it feels like forcing them to drink poison that'll never leave their system. I know it's a sacrifice and that they'll be the ones choosing to make it, but I worry about the cost. I'm afraid of what we'll be at the end of the road.
Look what it's done to us.
Zoo's crying face the other night floated to the forefront of my mind, only to be replaced by the memory of Chubbs's confession about the requirements of becoming a skip tracer, him being shot, Liam's battered face. All of these were linked in my mind now. They'd never fade, not even in the afterlight of all of this.
I think they understand more than you'd think, he said, tracing a finger along the edge of my ear. The kids who aren't League have been out there running for years. No one is innocent here. They want it just as bad as we do. We'll figure out a way to keep them as safe as possible. We'll take care of them.
Is that enough?
It will be.
Liam's kiss was unbearably tender.
I missed this. Us talking, I mean.
A bolt of guilt shot through me at his words, at how content he sounded.
Everything else seems crazy,
Liam said, one hand threading through my loose hair.
Let's just stay here, you and me, and not let anyone or anything else in for a while, okay?
This was the danger of him. In an instant, he could lift everything off my shoulders and set it aside. He became the answer to every doubt and lingering question. My world refocused, settling on him. Beautiful, perfect. Him. I didn't have to think about what I'd done, what would happen to us, even 5 minutes from now. Maybe he would never forgive me, not fully, but there was no thinking in this. If I couldn't bear every secret to him, unload everything in my heart, at least I could be close to him this way. He wanted comfort, and so did I. I nodded and brushed my lips as soft as a breath just behind his ear. The response was instant. A shudder ran through him, and it became a challenge to get that response from him again and again. He rolled over on top of me, and I shifted to draw my legs around his. He pressed down to capture my mouth, and I froze at the friction between us. Liam pulled back, bracing his elbows on either side of my head, his brows drawing together as he studied my face. I felt myself flood with color, the way it spread down my throat, across my chest. It wasn't the first time I'd felt how much he wanted me, but here, in this room, on this bed, it felt like more of a decision that needed to be made, one I wasn't ready for.
It doesn't have to be anything more than this, he said softly. I don't want you to think it has to be. This is actually pretty damn great.
Fingers skimmed against my ribcage, ran along the edge of my sports bra. Every last ounce of his attention focused on my lips again.
But if... when I went out, I made sure to get...
The words were flustered, tangled up in one another. But I understood his meaning, and it sent a small, growing spiral of happiness through me. He wanted this enough that he'd thought ahead. He would take the necessary precautions.
Days, weeks, years from now. When you're ready, so am I. Okay?
I wondered if he could feel how quickly he'd dialed up my heartbeat with only a few words. I was close enough to see the pulse at the base of his throat, if the trembling in his hands hadn't already spoken for him. I wrapped my arms around his waist, drawing him down to me again. "What am I going to do with you?" I asked, only half joking. That tiny smile grew as he lowered his face toward mine.
"Oh, you could try out a thing or two."
"Like what kinds of things?" I teased, pulling back as he came forward. He made a small, impatient noise. "Things that'll get us in trouble?"
"You are trouble," he said. "Capital T and everything."
I pulled him down, cutting his laughter off before it had the chance to start. My kiss eased off under his touch, becoming slower, a sweet kind of lazy. It made me feel, for the first time in my life, that I actually had time. We could take that soft pace, explore. "Can we not go to dinner every night?" I asked as his lips left mine and started to work toward my throat.
"Okay," he whispered. "Works for me."
I didn't feel shy or clumsy when my hand slid under his shirt again and began to draw it up, off. I heard him whisper my name, the sound of it breathy and raw, and it was like a hit of a drug to my system. I wanted to hear it again, again and again and again and again. There was a tentative knock on the door. Liam pulled back, breathing hard. It was hard to tell which looked more wild, his hair or his eyes. "Don't make a sound," I thought. "They'll go away." They seemed to. I let out a soft sigh as Liam settled back down over me, blocking the rest of the room with his broad shoulders. Then the door cracked open. Liam shot up so fast he nailed his head against the top bunk and actually half-tripped, half-fell onto the ground. Cold air hit my skin, and I looked down, realizing that at some point my own shirt had mysteriously vanished, only to reappear on the other end of the bunk's thin mattress.
"Hang on," Liam barked. "Just a sec."
I shoved the thing back over my head just as he bent to scoop his up off the floor. A small piece of folded paper fell out of his back pocket, fluttering to the ground softly. He stumbled over himself to get to the door before it could open the rest of the way, catching it in his hand. Liam filled the doorway with his body, preventing whoever was there from looking or coming in.
"Hey, sorry," came the timid voice, "but the showerhead is going crazy. Do you think you could fix it?"
Liam's whole posture relaxed.
"Now's not really a great time."
"The whole bathroom is flooding, and I'm really sorry. I didn't mean for it to happen."
"It's okay,"
Liam said, glancing back at me. His face was a portrait of apology. He held up one finger, motioning for me to wait. As soon as the door shut behind him, I set my mind to remaking his bed, refolding the top blanket one or both of us had managed to kick off at some point. My heel brushed something warm. Something that wasn't the cold tile. I bent down, retrieving the piece of paper that had fallen out of Liam's pocket. It had been folded over once into a smaller square, but it had opened as it hit the ground. My eyes were already taking in the neat letters carefully printed there before I could spare a thought to it being wrong. "Your name is Liam Stewart. You are 18 years old. Your parents are Harry and Grace Stewart. Cole is your brother, and Claire was your sister. You were in a camp, Caledonia, but you broke out. East River did burn. You were lost. You're in Lodi by choice because you want to stay with Chubbs, Zoo, and Ruby. You want to be here, helping them. Do not go, even if they tell you to. Do not go. Ruby can take your memories, but what you feel is the truth. You love her. You love her. You love her." I read the words again, and a third time, trying to make sense of them. Because the words were ones I knew,
I recognized I was reading sentences, but my mind disengaged. It up and left the picture before my heart could make the connection. Ruby can take your memories. It was a note to himself, to a future self, one he apparently was so sure would fall victim to my mind again. This was a cheat sheet. Security, because clearly my word wasn't going to cut it. I could promise him over and over again that I'd never touch his mind again, but it meant nothing. I had done it once. The trust between us was already broken. I went cold to the core. The shock of it, jumping from his warm touch to this, it was too much. I was the ash brushed aside after the fire had finally been blown out. You are so stupid, so stupid, so stupid. He doesn't trust you, no matter what he says. Stop. The world broke me out of the free fall I dropped into, and all at once the sensation of falling, sinking, eased. I said the word again, forcing my heart down out of my throat, stilling my thoughts. I said it again, and one more time, until my voice sounded like my own again, not some dry rasp. I paced the length of the room, trying to stop the torrent of thoughts shooting through my mind. Quick steps were moving down the hall, bare feet slapping against the tile. I panicked, shoving the note inside of the CD case, just as Liam swept back into the room. He was drenched in random places, his left shoulder, down his right side, the back of his sweats, the fabric below his knees, and the expression on his face was the resigned look of someone nominated for sainthood against his will. I plastered a smile on my face, holding my breath in the hope it would keep me from crying. Just seeing his face was enough to start unraveling the binding I had wrapped around the hurt.
"So," he said, wiping his damp hair off his face. "Apparently I have to stop telling people I know a little bit about plumbing, because a little bit is how to twist the knob to get the water to turn on and off." "What, I look that pathetic?"
No, not at all," I said.
"What's wrong?"
He took a step toward me.
"Your voice sounds..."
"I just realized it's almost 7, I said. "Cole wants us upstairs to talk through the plan for the camps. We should go."
His brow creased, but he stood back from the door, opening it for me. Just as I passed, he caught my shoulder and turned me back toward him. A droplet of water worked its way down from his hair, mapping out a trail on his cheek, over his jaw, down his throat as he swallowed hard. I couldn't meet his eyes as he studied me, and managed not to cringe as he leaned forward and pressed a sweet kiss to my cheek. The others were only just starting to mill into the computer room, joining the greens who were rearranging the desks out of their usual tidy rows and dragging them against the wall so they lined the room instead. Nico had reclaimed the laptop and was sitting at one of the desks along the rear wall, his back toward us. Everyone else faced the old marker-stained whiteboard and the map of the United States taped up next to it on the opposite end of the room. Chubbs was standing in front of the map, pushing in small red pins as Vida read something, city names, off a printed list.
"Nicely done with the brain voodoo, boo," she said when she saw us. "Consider your ass forgiven for not coming down to help us haul shit around the garage."
Chubbs glanced back over his shoulder, one hand still splayed out on the map.
"If we're going to try picking some of these groups up, we have 4 good options. There are at least 10 kids in Wyoming alone. If they haven't already moved on," Liam pointed out. "Now who's Mr. Doom and Gloom?" Chubbs shot back.
Whatever Liam was about to say was preempted by his brother sweeping into the room like a tornado of energy, a visibly pleased Senator Cruz at his side. The rare glimpse of happiness on her features made her look 10 years younger. She smiled when she caught my gaze, giving a small affirmative nod.
She'd done it then. She'd managed to secure some supplies for us.
Zoo, Hina, and Kylie were the last to appear in the doorway and carefully made their way through the field of kids on the floor to come sit beside us.
"Okay,"
Cole said, clapping his hands together.
"So, Thank y'all for your ingenious planning and scheming. I reviewed everything, and I think we've landed on a winning strategy.
He walked back toward the whiteboards, picking up one of the markers. A blue line was drawn down the middle of the board. At the top of one half, he wrote, Thurmond. On the other, Oasis.
Without any other preamble, he started in. We're going to be making two hits. One, Oasis, is in Nevada. It'll serve as a kind of test run for our big hit on Thurmond in 5 weeks' time. In addition to getting those poor kids out, think of Oasis as an opportunity to work out the kinks in our strategy.
I crossed my legs and rested my elbows on my knees, hands gripped in front of me. Calm. Something in my mind clicked into place at the familiarity of this, being debriefed on an upcoming op. The other league kids, Vida included, appeared to feel the same way, leaning into the moment when everyone else seemed to edge back, unsure.
One or two volunteers will enter Oasis ahead of the actual hit.
He turned to face the cluster of greens sitting together.
We're going to need to install a small camera in the frames of someone's glasses, and it can relay back to us here. We need to get a sense of the compound's layout to fine-tune our timing.
Why glasses? Senator Cruz asked. Won't those be taken when they're brought into the camp, too?
No, they're considered essential items, I piped up. They're probably the only things that won't be taken.
If Liam recognized that that had been lifted from his original plans at East River, he didn't show it. He sat with his legs sprawled out in front of him, leaning back on his hands. He watched his brother with wariness.
The catch is, the kids who volunteer can't have been previously in a camp. PSF policy dictates that kids be returned to the original camp they were processed through, and Oasis is a relatively new camp. There is absolutely no pressure to participate. Like I said, this is purely volunteer.
Zoo glanced between Liam and Chubbs, but it was Vida who smoothed a tuft of her hair down in silent reassurance.
That aspect of the plan won't be necessary for Thurmond, as we have three people who have been inside of the camp and are intimately familiar with its layout. The other difference between this and the big hit is what we're doing with the kids we free. From what intel we have, otherwise known as what intel Clancy let us have, Oasis has approximately 50 kids, all of whom I'd like to have return with us. Depending on how willing they are to fight, we can ask them to join us in the Thurmond hit, or we can slowly return them back to their parents, a few kids at a time. Are we still going to go out and try to round up the tribes of kids?
Chubbs asked, jerking his thumb back toward the map. Cole nodded.
We'll start sending out cars once we have supplies. We need as much manpower as possible if we're going to pull this off ourselves.
He moved through the other parts of the plan quickly. They were sketchy at best until we had actual images from inside of the camp's walls. It would be a small team, no more than 10 of us, armed but with the order to avoid a firefight if we could. With only 50 kids, there would be maybe 12 PSFs there at most, and one or two camp controllers. We would pose as a military convoy, bringing in the weekly supplies. I would be out in front, of course, because I'd have the job of influencing one of the camp controllers. He or she would continue to report that everything in the camp was fine while we drove the kids out using the camp's own transportation, whether it be SUVs, trucks, or a bus. The kids were silent, processing this, until Liam finally said,
50 kids is a hell of a lot different than 3,000 kids. Better to run this through on a scaled model,
Cole said, smiling, but somehow not smiling.
Okay, that may be true, but other than giving us practice and rescuing a small group of kids, what is this going to accomplish?
Cole put his hands on his hips, one brow raised.
That's not enough for you? Really?
No, I mean...
Liam ran an agitated hand back through his hair.
The plan is good, but couldn't it serve as something else, too? Are we going to release the photos or video that's taken so people can actually see what conditions are like in there?
A few kids murmured in agreement, including Lucy, who added,
I like that idea a lot. people should have the opportunity to see what it's really like.
Do you have the means to do that without Gray tracing their source, swooping in and blowing this place sky high?
Liam's face was still hard, but I could sense him retreating under Cole's look.
Whose plan was this?
Chubbs asked.
I read through all of them, and I don't recognize it.
Cole's jaw set, just for a moment.
It's a combination of a number of them. I pulled the best elements from each.
Actually, it was the exact plan I had handed him, and he knew it. I faced the front of the room, refusing to turn when I felt Chubbs's gaze fall on me. There was no reason to fuel the fire by pointing it out to them.
Senator?
Cole motioned for her to step up.
Ah, yes, she said. I was able to secure a promise of supplies from my contacts in Canada. Food, gasoline, technology, and a limited supply of guns. The issue is that they refuse to bring them across the border into California. They want to bring them in by boat to Gold Beach, Oregon.
Is that doable?
Liam spoke up before Cole did.
I just need a map and a car, both of which I can find around here. And at least three kids as backup,
Cole amended.
Kylie, Zach, and Vida.
And me.
The words were only just out of my mouth when there was a bang at the other end of the room. I turned around in time to see Nico stumble backward and trip over the chair he'd been sitting in. He pressed both hands against his mouth as his knees gave out under him. The noise that escaped him was a high, keening moan. I was up and moving toward him before I could stop myself, gripping his arms to steady him and stop his rocking.
What? What is it?
By then, Cole and the rest of the room had already surrounded the laptop, blocking my view of whatever was on the screen.
Kate,
Nico cried.
Kate, Ruby, they took her. They took Kate.
Gasps flew up around me like a flock of birds. I released my grip on Nico and pushed to the front of the kids, who folded against each other to create a path for me. Vida was gripping the laptop, had lifted it off the desk, and it was only because Chubbs was there to grab her arms that she didn't get to slam it down against the hard surface.
You son of a bitch! She spat at Cole. This is on you, asshole!
God damn it! Damn it!
Chubbs wrapped both arms over her chest, pinning her arms to her side as she lashed out with her feet, not caring who she kicked. She thrashed around, trying to headbutt him off, and only succeeded in knocking his glasses off his face. Zoo rushed to pick them up before they could be trampled. The video on the screen was looping on the homepage of a news site, fuzzy and shaky, as if it had been shot from a distance. A long line of men and women with black hoods and bound hands and legs were lying on the side of a highway, with smoking car wreckage nearby. They were loaded onto the back of a military truck one at a time, overseen by soldiers armed with assault rifles that reflected the late afternoon light. The headline running beneath the pictures was, Children's League Agents Captured in Colorado. My head throbbed as I watched it play through again, searching for her, trying to see what made Vida and Nico certain. Nearly all of the prisoners were dressed in black sweats or op gear, the same things they had left the ranch in. Some were easy enough to identify. Sen's long braid, Instructor Johnson's imposing height. Maybe she hadn't reached the other agents in time to try to turn them back. Maybe she was the one who had recorded the video and was safely on her way back to us. Maybe she... Cole paused the video on a shot of the prisoners lining up at the truck and pointed to a smaller figure at the end. I leaned forward, bringing my face close to the screen. When he moved his finger, I saw the traces of white blonde hair escaping from beneath the hood. The figure was standing calmly, despite the awkward angle at which they'd bound her arms. The other agents bucked and bumped the soldiers, hassling them even on their way into imprisonment. Cole unpaused the video, and she walked forward, head down, not so much as shrugging off the touch of the soldiers who lifted her into the back of the truck.
No.
I felt a painful crack down my center. The shapes and faces around me seemed to blur as I stepped back, wrapping my arms around myself. Blood pounded through my veins, making my legs feel light, my head lighter. I couldn't calm the sensation, couldn't get the jitters out of my nerves long enough to think a whole coherent thought. Kate! She left. I let her go. They'll kill her. They'll execute her as a traitor. I let her go, and now they have her. They have Kate. I heard Nico's crying and felt the pressure build behind my own eyes, a pain that spread to cover my whole face.
What does the AMP watermark mean? Liam was asking. It's in the upper right-hand corner of the video.
That's short for Amplify, Senator Cruz answered. They're an underground news outlet. Gray must be livid. They've shown he hasn't successfully stamped out the League in the Los Angeles attacks like he promised.
Do they collect information? How do they distribute it? Liam pressed. Do you have any contacts there?
Well, yes, but...
But it doesn't matter, Lee, Cole cut in. Look at this, Liam said, gesturing toward the laptop. They got the video to a major online news outlet. They convinced them to run it, knowing that Gray could come after this company, too. This is what we should be focused on, not fighting.
Kids were nodding now, whispering.
We don't need guns. We need to get people information. Information about camp locations, what the conditions are like there. Amplify could help us get the word out, and then the parents will want to do something to help the kids themselves. They'll go to the camps, stage protests. Liam! Cole barked. Pay attention to what's important here. News organizations cannot be trusted, no matter how underground they claim to be. They'll sell you out in a second if it means attaching their name to a good story. You want to know why I won't contact them? Because I don't want to risk the lives of everyone here by accidentally or intentionally revealing our location. We can do this ourselves. End of discussion.
Liam stood his ground, color washing up from his throat to his face as his temper rose. Cole squared off against him, looking as furious as I'd ever seen him.
We have to go after them, Vida was saying. Where is the nearest prison bunker to where they were picked up? Would they fly them east?
They'd have to keep them alive. They'd want to interrogate them, right? We can put our ear to the ground, stage an op.
We can't do that, Vida, and you know it, Cole said.
He leaned back against the desk, his arms crossed over his chest. Still, I saw how his hand gave a small jerk and how he pressed his arms closer to his body to try to hide it. His face was painted with fury, lined with sympathy. The words didn't make sense to me, not in the context of his expression.
What the fuck?
Hey. You think I don't want to go after my friend? You think I want her to go through this? No one deserves this, least of all Kate. It's too late to do anything. You're right. They're probably going to try to bring them in for interrogation. But once they have them underground, they're gone. They've disappeared. We're not ever...
He swallowed.
We're not going to see any of those people alive again.
Vida let out a scream of frustration.
We got your ass out! We got you out of one of those prisons!
With a fully armed, well-trained tactical team, Cole said. And even then there were casualties. Even if we find where they've brought them, do you honestly think Kate could live with herself knowing that any of you were hurt trying to get her out? This is why we have that rule in the League. If you're caught, we can't come for you.
Yeah, unless it's you, she snarled.
Because Albin thought he might still have the flash drive of information from Lita, the one that was now worthless, because of what he really was. I looked over at him, silently willing him to just tell them so they'd understand.
You're always bragging about those crazy-ass missions you went on, she said, her voice taking on a pleading tone.
Vida slumped, her furious energy sapped to the point that Chubbs was holding her up on her feet.
Why not this one? Why?
Because this one wouldn't be crazy. It'd be suicidal. Cole said, and the fastest, best way we have of getting her and the others out is to see our plan through. It's to get Gray out of office.
Talk to Harry, Liam said. He has contacts in the different branches of the military. He can recommend someone to talk to.
Cole looked like he wanted to argue with that, like the idea of asking his stepfather for help repulsed him, but he held his tongue.
The bigger concern we have now is deciding whether to stay here or go. Any one of them could compromise our location.
You said that your plan was to trick them into thinking we were going too, Chubb said, that we weren't coming here at all.
Right,
Cole hesitated.
But Connor knew that we were staying.
Oh, fuck you,
Vida yelled, finally breaking out of Chubb's hold.
Fuck you, Stuart! You think she'd give us up?
Having experienced their interrogation methods firsthand, darling,
Cole said, his voice venomous,
I would say that is an unfortunate possibility.
She won't.
The others turned to look at me, and I wondered if I looked as flushed and crazed as I felt. Kate would die before she'd tell them. And that was the problem, wasn't it? She would let them kill her. She would sacrifice herself before she'd ever let them hurt us. A scream bubbled up in my chest as Liam reached over, trying to wrap an arm around me. I shrugged him off, pulling away from his touch. I didn't want to be near anyone right now. The room was suffocating, got smaller and smaller and smaller as more people turned to stare. I have to get out of here. Now. Right now, before the black swelling in my vision overtook everything. I couldn't get air into my chest, not with so many people around me. The air in the hallway was cool, at least. I wanted to go, just go, but I couldn't take the tunnel out, and I couldn't keep pacing the downstairs halls like an insane person. Without a thought, without remembering getting there, I was upstairs, pushing through the double doors separating the halls, and I was in the training room. I got on the nearest treadmill, blood rushing loud enough in my ears to drown out the electronic beeps as I turned up the speed and began to run. The levels flew by, and still I kept my finger on the up arrow until it felt like I was flying. My feet struck the belt in time with a bruising pace of my heart. She's gone. She's gone. She's gone, just like Jude. You told her to leave. You sent her away. They'll kill her. I lost time. I lost my head. I lost everything and ran. My arms pumped that much harder at my sides, as if they could keep dragging me forward when my legs started to give out. The air conditioning sent chills shooting down my back, cooling the sweat dripping from my face. I was only getting air to my lungs in long, harsh gasps, each breath sobbing in and out of me. There was a blur of black in the corner of my vision, a streak in front of my eyes. I pitched forward as the belt snapped to a stop under me, barely catching myself on the arms of the treadmill. Once my legs stopped moving, they seemed to dissolve under me. I couldn't put weight on my ankles, let alone straighten my knees. There were sounds to my right, murmurs that became words, words that finally took on meaning. I rolled onto my back, raising my hands to cover my face as I dragged in one breath after another. My hands were pulled away. A face swam in my vision. Blonde hair, square jaw, blue eyes. Liam.
Okay, easy does it. Come on, Jim. That's enough.
Cole. He caught me by the arms and forced me upright, sliding me forward to sit up at the edge of the machine. Sweat stung my eyes, tasted like salt on my lips.
I told her to leave, I said hoarsely. It's my fault.
It's not your fault,
he said softly. He pushed the hair sticking to my forehead out of the way.
She made the choice to leave. She was doing what she thought was right, just like you and me.
I can't lose her, too,
I told him.
I know, he said. She'll make it, though. You're right. She won't give us up. Of course she won't. Connor is smart,
she'll figure out a way to survive and get back to her kids. That's how she is.
She and Jude, and who else? Who else would I have to lose before this was over?
Kansas HQ is probably already on this,
he said quietly.
We don't have the means to go get her, but they do. It's a lot of agents to lose, and good ones at that. I'll see if I can find out if they have something planned.
He turned us slightly to the right, reorienting my line of sight toward the door, where there were at least 10 kids watching his progress, varying degrees of worry on their faces. I tried to take a step, but now that my muscles were still, it was like they had seized up.
You gotta stand up and walk, Jem,
he said quietly, turning his back on them.
You have to walk out of here. Not just for them, but for yourself. Come on. You have to walk out of here on your own 2 feet.
So I did. Each step made my feet scream in pain where they rubbed up against the edge of the tennis shoes. I looked down to where bright red stains were spreading across the white cotton socks. I kept my hand on Cole's shoulder, trying to hide how heavily I was leaning on him, as we made a left down the hall instead of heading right to go downstairs where the bunk rooms were. I didn't have the energy to protest as he opened the door to Kate's old room and turned the lights on. I managed to stay vertical until the small bed was in arm's reach. By then, my knees had had enough. Leaning forward, I tried to untie the shoelaces, but my hands were shaking so badly, Cole had to tease the knots out for me. He clucked his tongue at the sight of the socks as I peeled them off, but said nothing.
I ruined it, didn't I?
I asked. The other kids won't trust me. Cole shook his head.
All they saw was someone upset over losing someone they love. No harm, no foul, as the saying goes. Will you cut yourself some slack before you literally run yourself into the ground? Take care of yourself, so you can help me take care of them, all right? That's the deal, and it starts tonight, right now, with you staying here and sleeping for at least 7 hours.
But, Clancy...
I can deliver the little prince's meal for one night,
he said.
Do you honestly think you could handle him right now if he tried to take you on?
Take someone with you, I said. Have them watch from behind the door to make sure he doesn't try anything.
I'll ask Vida.
Chubbs would be better.
You got it.
I spread my legs out on the bed in front of me as he stood up, too tired to argue, too tired to do much beside watch him go. Just as he turned out the lights, I said, Tomorrow. I'm going to find Lillian Gray tomorrow. I'm going to take care of it. Of everyone. And when this was over, I'd be the one to go find Kate. I'd save her the same way she saved me.
Atta girl. I have no doubt.
He stopped in the doorway, turning back.
There's someone waiting for you. Do you want me to let her in?
I nodded. It was Zoo. Cole shut the door behind him, and I could just make out the edges of her dark shape, outlined by the faint glow bleeding into the room from under the door. She pulled the thin top sheet up over me, finishing with a kiss to my forehead. And that. Not the video, not imagining what they would do to Kate as a prisoner. That tender kiss was what brought the tears to the surface. I'm sorry, I whispered. I didn't mean to make you worry. She took care of me, and I never treated her as well as I should have, and now she's gone, and doesn't know that I'm sorry. They could kill her. I felt her hand around mine, squeezing in reassurance. I know, I know. She used her other hand to smooth the hair away from my face. You lost someone, I said, my voice sounding rough to my own ears. The guy who helped you get to California. Will you tell me about him? Not what happened to him, not if you don't want to talk about it, but what he was like as a person. Would that be okay? My eyes had adjusted to the darkness well enough to see her nod, even if I couldn't read her expression. What was his name? Zoo picked up the same small notebook she'd been toting around for weeks. I closed my eyes,
listening to the faint scratch of her pencil against the paper, only opening them when she tapped my shoulder with it. She reached over and switched on the light on the dresser so I could read it. Gabe. In the single second before she turned the light off, I saw tears caught in her lashes. The expression on her face knifed clean through my heart. I would have done anything, anything, to take the weight of that pain off her shoulders before it crushed her into dust. But I knew better. There was no real relief from it. You just had to be willing to let the people around you serve as supports and take their share of it when it seemed too much, too heavy, to hold on your own. I shifted back on the narrow mattress, giving her room to crawl in next to me. Zoo was all elbows and knees, growing, stretching up in height, the way everyone seemed to, right before they crossed that strange, ambiguous line into being a teenager, an almost adult. But the way she cried, the way she wrapped her arms around me and buried her warm, wet face against my neck, that was a kid. That was a kid who'd already lived a hard life and was being asked to take on more. I know, I said quietly. I know. The darkness rose and fell over me like a cold wave. I shut my eyes, relishing the simple fact that my mind was like a blank sheet, drained of all thoughts. But hours later, no matter how still I forced myself to be, I couldn't shake the rush of sensation in my legs, the feeling that they were still running. 11. I woke up the next morning looking for a fight. Muscles ached that I didn't know I had, and my feet screamed bloody murder when I slid my tennis shoes back on. All the sleep had done was process my stifling sadness into pure, unflinching anger. I had energy to burn. I opened the door and shut it behind me as quietly as I could, so as not to wake up Zoo. The manual clock in the hallway said 4:45 a.m. It would be another hour before anyone else was up and ready for the day. Plenty of time to work out the lightning zipping through my body and return to some state of calm. The light in the gym was already on, and my whole body tensed in anticipation when I saw who was running on the treadmill, taking quick, confident strides. Cole must have seen me out of the corner of his eye, but he kept running and didn't acknowledge me until I was standing right next to the machine and its whirring belt.
Not in the mood, Jim.
His voice was flat, edged with warning.
Too bad, I said, walking over to retrieve two pairs of gloves. I am.
I waited for him, gloves on my hands, stretching, trying to warm my body up for this. Finally, after a good 5 minutes, he let out a grunt and hit the stop button on the machine. Cole scooped up the gloves from the floor, his face flushed from the run, his eyes overly bright. I had half a second to drop back into a fighting stance before his knee rose up toward my stomach. I jumped back, but was caught by yet another obvious swing he made to my sternum. That, at least, sent the thoughts shooting out of me, along with every last ounce of air in my lungs. It was a distraction. He had me pinned against his chest in the space of a single heartbeat. I twisted out from under his arm, trying to use the momentum to flip him over onto his back. Like that was ever going to happen. The best I got was a stomp to his instep. He didn't back off, though, not the way he normally would have. I felt the temperature in the room spike dramatically, and then he pulled back, letting me drop onto the floor with a sound of disgust. No! The word shot through my mind as he turned his back to me and started to remove his gloves. The sparring may have started as a way to release some of the heat that was boiling me alive from the inside out, but my head had hooked into the rush of it in a way I hadn't expected. I needed more. I needed to get the black thoughts of Kate and Jude and what was waiting for us at the end of all of this out of me. And that required sweating or bleeding it out. I lowered my head and charged toward him. I saw his expression darken in the mirror in front of him just before he slammed into it. This time, momentum actually did its job, sending us both sprawling back onto the edge of the mat. Without a single word,
Cole dragged me by my neck further onto the mat, and then he showed me just how pissed off he really was. Trying to roll or kick him off did nothing. He had me pinned beneath him, his whole crushing weight settled on my chest. One hand pinned mine over my head, and the other arm came across my neck, applying just the right amount of pressure there to dwindle my oxygen supply down to nothing. He eased up on my windpipe, but not by much. I thrashed under him, knees kicking up to try to hit his lower back. His skin seemed tight against his skull, his face set with fury. I choked in a shallow breath, but he didn't pull back. My mind was floating away from my body, drifting into that same pool of black forming in my eyes.
Cole!
I choked out.
Stop!
He didn't hear me. Wherever he'd gone inside, I wasn't going to be able to touch him, and I knew that the only way out of this was in. I drove into his mind like I was throwing a punch. I should have landed the hit and bounced back out, let it register like an electrical shock to his system. But his thoughts had hooks. They caught my mind, dragging it back down, drowning me in the scene melting into place around me. Light swirled around me, bending into shadows that became a small kitchen paneled in dark wood. There was dim, warm light coming through the curtains that masked the window above the sink. I smelled something burning. Food. The trail of gray floating around me was smoke drifting from the closed oven door. Pots and pans popped up on the stove, appearing one at a time. The faint sizzling sound came from the brown sauce that had boiled over the lip of the metal pan. A woman appeared in front of me, wearing a simple blue dress. I had a low vantage point from the floor. I couldn't see anything besides her long blonde hair and the hands that kept pushing me back, back, back. A surge of anger flooded me, and I saw, rather than felt, my own arms up, straining to reach for something. For the man was the last to materialize, facing the woman. His face was in shadows, but there was something familiar about it. The shape of the nose, the set of the jaw. I knew this face. I'd seen two younger versions of it. He had gone a shade past red and was screaming, screaming, sweat and fury pouring off him, clouding the room, making everything feel slow and heavy. My gaze shifted down, taking in his dark, wrinkled polo shirt, the squirming toddler he held like a sack in one arm, slowly going pink in the face as he cried, trying to wriggle free, reaching for my arms. His hair was lighter, curling at the ends. The first sound that broke through the muffled din of the memory was his piercing wail of terror as the man picked up the steaming iron from the board and brought it up near his face, as if he was going to press its tip against the baby's cheek. The woman in front of me fell onto her knees, begging.
Put him down, please. I'll fix it. I'll fix it. It'll be all right. Don't you know? I love you. I won't have anyone over again. I promise. Just please give him to me. Please give him to me.
The iron was lowered, set back down on the board, singeing the shirt left there waiting to be smoothed out. The man's expression transformed, a sickening look of triumph crossing it as he shifted the sobbing boy, holding him under his other arm. He reached out to touch the woman, to stroke her face. The man was so fixated on her bowed head that he didn't see the skillet she'd pulled off a nearby low shelf, not until she stood and swung it up in a clean arc toward his face. The baby fell to the floor, and I rushed toward him, the sound of gurgling and pain and metal striking flesh and bone drowned out by his hysterical tears. I turned his soft weight over and picked him up. There was a cut at the corner of his lips, where one of his new teeth had caught the tender skin. It was bleeding profusely, but the boy stilled and quieted, looking up into my face with these wide eyes, rimmed with big tears. His thumb slid into his mouth as I tried to wipe the blood away. He didn't start bawling again until he saw the woman, his mother, crying too, reaching down to pick him up and clutch him to her chest. She snatched up my hand and dragged me away from the man's prone form on the floor, the mess of his blood on the black and white checkered tile.
He shuddered and coughed, and we only moved faster toward the door. She swiped her purse off the counter, then doubled back for the keys when she realized they'd fallen out. The door led to a garage, and the light that flooded the cramped, dark space dissolved the memory once and for all. I surfaced at the exact moment the weight came off my chest. I was breathing, coughing, choking on the flood of air that filled it. I rolled onto my side, curling into as small a protective ball as I could. It was several agonizing minutes before fear released its claws from me. The small, breathy sobs I heard weren't my own. I propped myself up on my elbow, looking for the source. Cole sat at the edge of the mat, his back to me as he hunched over his knees, struggling to master his breathing. The section of the mirror in front of him was a spiderweb of cracks, stained with blood. I forced my feet under me and stood on shaking legs, taking one halting step toward him and then another. He clutched his right hand to his chest, ignoring the way it bled onto his shirt. I walked to the towel rack and returned with a small cloth, pulling his hand toward me so I could clean the blood away. His skin was hot, boiling to the touch as he shook.
"Fuck,"
he breathed out.
"I'm sorry. We shouldn't do this anymore. Fuck!"
"Okay," I said softly, and stayed anyway. I was in the bathroom, still dripping from my shower, when I heard Chubbs's voice carry down the hallway. With one last glance to make sure my hoodie covered the worst of the new bruising on my neck, I dashed out of the room, calling after him. He spun on his heel, clearly relieved.
"There you are. You missed the others. They had to leave. Apparently it's an 8-hour drive to Gold Beach, and the idiots want to do it in one day."
"They found a truck to carry the supplies?" I asked.
"Yeah, which you would have discovered for yourself had you made an appearance at breakfast." Sorry. That came out wrong. I didn't get to tell you last night, but I'm sorry about Agent Connor. I want to tell you everything will be all right, but I'm afraid you'll punch me."
It was the first faint smile I'd managed all day. "Was Vi okay about going?" He let out a long sigh, deflating somewhat.
"She was trying to find you last night to run ideas by you. But it's probably for the best she didn't. She had a million ideas of how the two of you could sneak off to find Agent Connor."
There it was, the now daily sensation of being the biggest asshole in the world. I hadn't even tried to talk to her about this last night. I'd promised her that we would talk about these things, work through them together, and what had I done? Gone off alone to run my head clear.
"Are we still going to talk to Clancy?"
he asked. "Wait, how did you—" I didn't remember mentioning it to him, but it was exactly why I'd come out to catch him.
"We talked about this yesterday afternoon, when you were going to lie down for a while,"
he said. I gave him a look that must have registered how blank my mind felt. "We did?"
We did. For at least 10 minutes. You nodded. That's generally a sign that you, you know, understand and agree.
"Oh, you're right. Sorry."
"You are exhausted,"
he said, poking my forehead.
"Impaired judgment and forgetfulness are both symptoms."
I nodded, giving him that. "Do you mind coming now? I have a feeling this might take a while."
"And miss the chance to spend another day hauling around filthy, broken crap? Lead on."
Cole hadn't had the thought, or likely the time, to prepare Clancy's meals for the day. I listened to Chubbs complain about Vida and Vida's language, and how Vida's reckless history with firearms was going to get us all killed, as I did my best not to take Clancy's water bottle, dump it out, and fill it with bleach. The pantry had been nothing but bones a week ago, but the humanitarian rations had managed to flesh it out to the point that it was starting to look like a healthy stash. I glanced at the clipboard posted outside of its door, feeling a faint smile stretch across my lips at Liam's neat, careful notes about what we'd already used and what was on the menu for the rest of the week. Food allergies were noted at the very bottom of the chart. Of course. leave it to Liam to be thoughtful enough to kill himself to try to find almond milk and gluten-free pasta for the two whole kids that needed it.
Ready?
Chubbs asked once we were standing in the file room.